We will begin this way. This is going to be a surprise, but go ahead and turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is one of the most vital, central, and important, and of course, for that reason, I hope at least, relatively famous ones in the Torah portion. It is the first real introduction to the story of Abram, who is going to get renamed in this one. We know him more popularly as Abraham. But the first words are, in fact, after Yahuwah says, in other words, it says that Yahuwah said the following to you, to Abram, "Get thee out," or "Shalach lech lecha." And essentially, we recognize that "get out" part in there, "lech lecha," get out of your country, the country where you have been, and away from your kin, from your father's house. And instead, he says, "Go into the land that I will show you." And I will, okay, so here comes probably the most famous set of promises in the book. "And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and be thou a blessing. And I will bless them that bless you, and him that curses you will I curse. And in you shall all the families of the earth be," or actually it says ha'adamah, "of the ground be blessed." So Abram went as Yahuwah had spoken unto him, and Lot, this is his nephew, remember, went along with him. And it says, at the point where this happened, Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. So here's a 75-year-old guy, leave behind everything except your wife and a little bit of your family, but everybody else that you've ever known, everything you have grown up with, and this place that you've been for so many years, and go. And he does. And it says, Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all the substance that they had gathered, all the souls that they had and that had gathered with them there in Haran. They went forth to go down into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan eventually they came. Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, under the terebinth of Moreh. And at this point it says the Canaanite was then in the land. And Yahuwah appeared to Abram, and he said, "Unto your seed will I give this land." And there he built an altar unto Yahuwah, who appeared unto him. Now notice that even though we don't officially see that he made himself known, it's clear that the name of Yahuwah does appear in this story. Because if you see it, you won't see it in most English Bibles. They take it out, right? They put L-O-R-D in caps in there instead of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. But after that, he removed from there, and he went to the mountain on the east side of Bethel, pitched his tent, having Bethel to his west, and Ai on the east. There he built an altar unto Yahuwah, and here it says it, "And he called upon the name of Yahuwah." And Abram journeyed, going on still further southward. And at this point, it tells us there was a famine in the land. So Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was sore in the land. Now, there's an interesting comment. Now, this is not from Rashi, and not even the Rambam, the Maimonides. In fact, this is another relative. I believe it's the grandson of the Rambam. But it's called he's often called the Ramban, Naimonides. And essentially, he asks a question. I think it's an interesting question. Did this happen because at this point, he does not yet completely and fully trust El as he will later? And it's a good question because, why does he in fact go beyond the place that he's been told he's going to be given? And as we see, it's not all a bed of roses down there. There's some issues that come up, and he's not without fear either. So it came to pass when he came near to enter into Egypt, he said to Sarai, his wife, "Look, I've suddenly noticed, right? I know that you are a fair woman to look upon." In other words, he's realized his wife, even though she's up there, is a good-looking woman. And it'll come to pass, he said, when the Egyptians take a look at you, they're going to say, "Wow, that's his wife. So they'll kill me so they can keep you alive. So I pray you, tell them instead that you're my sister, that it might be well with me for your sake, and that my soul might live because of you." So it came to pass, sure enough, when Abram had come into Egypt, Egyptians, they looked at her and they said, "Yep, she is a good-looking woman." And the princes of Pharaoh saw her. They told Pharaoh that she was a good-looking woman, and she was taken into Pharaoh's house. And he dealt well with Abram for her sake, and he had sheep and oxen and he asses, men servants and maid servants, she asses and camels. So it looks like Abram did okay by his quote-unquote sister, but says, Yahuwah plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So the implication, obviously, and I would say even though sometimes the rabbis try to claim, no, surely this didn't happen, it certainly looks like the text is suggesting pretty clearly that Pharaoh took her and claimed her as a wife. And the next part of the story seems to bear that out. He then called unto Abram, and he said, what is this you have done to me? Why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she's my sister? And then he says it, so that I took her to be my wife. That word there, the root word is lekach, and it has exactly the meaning that you would think. So therefore, hey, look, this is your wife, you take her, and get on your way. So Pharaoh gave men charge concerning him. They brought him on his way, and his wife, and all that he had. Now notice, we don't hear the story or the response here. We're going to get a similar story later. Then we hear the story, because we don't hear Abram's answer at this point. So, Abram then went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, Lot with him. Now, this is interesting, too, because the he word here is emo. The pronoun is emo, or with him. And the implication, say the sages, is unlike when we first see that Lot went with him in the very first part of the story here, where he went with him, but he went in a subordinate role. At this point, he is no longer a subordinate, is what the implication is of the Hebrew language. And then it says, Abram was very rich. He had a whole lot of cattle, of silver, and gold. And he went on his journeys from the south up to Bethel, as far as there, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, unto the place of that altar which he'd made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of Yahuwah. And also Lot, who went with him, had flocks and herds and tents. The land was not able to bear them, though, that they might dwell together. In other words, their impact on the land because of the large number of cattle they had was real high. So their substance was great. They couldn't dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's cattle and the herdsmen of Lot's cattle. And by the way, the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelt then in the land as well. And Abram finally says to his nephew Lot, hey, look, let's not have any strife, I pray you, between me and you, and between my herdsmen and yours, for we are in fact brethren. Is not the whole land here before us? So separate yourself, I pray you, from me. And if you go to the left hand, I'll go to the right, or if you decide to go to the right hand, then I'll go to the left. So Lot lifted up his eyes, and he beheld all the plain of the Jordan. There was well watered everywhere, before Yahuwah destroyed, it notes, Sodom and Gomorrah. Like the garden of Yahuwah, like the land of Egypt, as you go down into Zoar. So, Lot decided he liked the plain of the Jordan. And he went east, and he separated themselves, or they separated themselves, one from the other. So, Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt out in the cities of the plain. He moved his tent as far as the place, we've heard the name, Sodom. Now, it says, the men of Sodom were wicked, sinners exceedingly against Yahuwah. And Yahuwah said to Abram, after Lot was separated from him. Now, here is a note that I see in the margins, and I think this one is interesting, too, because you notice we're told after he went up out of Egypt, that he called at Bethel, the place where he'd made his altar, on the name of Yahuwah. We don't hear what he heard in response. We don't know if he did or didn't, but Scripture doesn't tell us. But then, after Lot leaves him, and this is the first time since Genesis 12:7 that we see a response, after Lot is separated, Yahuwah speaks to him. So the sages read a lot into that and suggest maybe as long as Lot was with him, he didn't get that much interaction. Anyway, lift up your eyes now. Look from the place where you are to the north and south and east and west, because all of the land that you see, everywhere that you see, I will give it to you and to your seed forever. I will also make your seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, well, then that's how many your seed shall be. So arise, walk through the land, the length of it and the breadth of it, for unto you will I give it. So Abram moved his tent. He came and he dwelt by the terebinths of Mamre, which are in Hebron. There he built an altar unto Yahuwah. Now, this is when we see a major change of a venue, I guess you'd say, a kind of a change in the story. And this is the first recorded war in human history. And it's also called the War of the Four Kings versus the Five, or the War of Evil versus Evil. All of those are appropriate, and they're all described here in this one chapter, chapter 14. So it came to pass then, in the days of the king of Shinar, a fellow named Amraphel, and Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedor Laomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goyim, that they made war with some other kings. Now, these are some interesting names here. Bera, Be-ra, right? Be meaning in, Ra, evil. So Bera, in evil. He's the king of Sodom. Doesn't that make appropriate sense? With Beersha, which is basically with wickedness, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Adma, Shemeber, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, same as Zor, which actually means insignificance. So all of these came as allies into the valley of Sidim, also called the Salt Sea. And 12 years they served that king Chedor Laomer, and in the 13th year they'd had enough, they rebelled. The 14th year came Chedor Laomer and the kings that were with him, and they smote the Rephaim. Now, you notice these are the names of some giant folks. They smote the Rephaim in Ashtaroth Karnaim, and the Zuzim in Ham, and the Amim in Shaveh Kiriataim. All of them, big folks. And the Horites and their Mount Seir unto El Paran, which is by the wilderness. And then they turned back, and they came to En-Mishpat, the same as Kadesh, and they smote all the country of the Amalekites, and also the Amorites that dwelt in Hatzatzon Tamar. And there went out the kings of Sodom, and, I'm sorry, the king singular of Sodom, and the king of Gomorrah, and the king of Adma, and the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, the same as Zor, and they set in battle array against them in the Vale of Sidim. So here comes the real big battle against Chedor Laomer, king of Elam, Tidal, king of Goim, Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, four kings against the five. Now, the Vale of Sidim, it says, was full of slime pits. The kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, and there they fell. And they that remained, in turn, fled to the mountain. So they took all of the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah. Remember, that is where Lot was at one point. That's going to play a part here. And they went and took all their victuals, too, and they went on their way. And, yep, they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, along with his goods, and they departed. And eventually somebody came that had escaped and told Abram the Hebrew, now he dwelt by the Terebinth of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol, and brother of Abner. These were all confederate with Abram. So he had some allies. And when Abram heard that his brother had been taken captive, he took his trained men, born in his house, total of 318 of them, and pursued as far as Dan. And there he divided himself against them by night. So he split up his forces, he and his servants, and he smote them. And he pursued them unto Hobah on the left hand of Damascus. So way further north. And he brought back all of the goods, and he brought back his brother Lot, and all of his goods, and the women too, and all the people. And the king of Sodom then went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Chedor Laomer, their oppressor. And the kings were with him at the Vale of Shaveh, the same as also called the King's Vale. And here we get the one introduction to a fellow who is referenced throughout Scripture later on, particularly in the apostolic writings, but this is a singular place where he appears prior to that. Melchizedek, right? Zadok meaning one who is knowledgeable about Torah, and Melech, we recognize the root word there, king. Melchizedek. So he is a wise and knowledgeable of Torah king. He is also king of Shalom, king of Salem. He brought forth bread and wine, and he, it says, was a priest of Elohim the Most High. So he's a king and he's a priest. And he blessed him. So it sounds like Melchizedek blessed Abram, and he said, "Blessed be Abram of Elohim Most High, maker of heaven and earth, and blessed be Elohim the Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand." And he gave him a tenth of all. So it sounds like, and this is the way the sages read it anyway, because it's not 100% clear, that in turn Abram gave him a tithe, a tenth. The king of Sodom then said unto Abram, "Hey, give me the persons. You take all the booty for yourself." And Abram said to the king of Sodom, sounds like he's not a particularly fan of this fellow, I have lifted up my hand unto Yahuwah, Elohim Most High, maker of heaven and earth, and I won't take a thread, nor a shoe latchet, nor anything that is yours, lest you should say, I have made Abram rich. Only thing I want to take, he said, is that which the young men have eaten. In other words, he's going to take the food that they've eaten. He's going to be repaid for that. And the portion of the men which went with me. In other words, the men are entitled to a portion of the spoil. So they get that. Aner, Eshcol, and Mamre, let them take their portion. So after these things, it says, the word of Yahuwah again came to Abram, this time in a vision. And he said, fear not, Abram, I am your shield. Magen Abraham, there's the shield of Abraham, although it's Magen Abram at this point, and your reward shall be exceedingly great. So Abram said, O Yahuwah Elohi, my God, what will you give me, seeing I don't have any kids? I'm childless, and the only person that will end up being the possessor of my house, my heir, in other words, is Eliezer, his servant, from Damascus. And Abram said, behold, to me you have given no seed, and lo, one born in my house is to be my heir. Behold, the word of Yahuwah came to him and said, Nah, that man shall not be your heir, but he that shall come forth out of your own loins, your own bowels, that will be your heir. So he, Yahuwah, brought him forth abroad and said, Look towards the heavens, count the stars, if you're able to. And he said to him, so shall your seed be. So your seed will be basically numerous as the stars. And he believed Yahuwah. And that was counted by Yahuwah to him for righteousness, for tzedakah. We see this being quoted later on as well, of course. And then he, Yahuwah, said to him, Ani Yahuwah. There it is. Ani Yahuwah that brought you up out of Ur of the Chaldees to give you this land to inherit it. And he, and this time Abram responds, O Lord Elohim, Yahuwah, how will I know? So he's asking for a sign. How will I know that I in fact shall inherit it? And he said unto him, okay, get yourself for me, take a heifer, 3 years old, get a she-goat, 3 years old, and a ram, 3 years old, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. So he took all of these things, and he divided them in the midst, and he laid one half over against the other. So he sacrificed them, and he literally split the pieces, but the birds he didn't divide. Now, birds of prey came down upon the carcasses. Abram drove them away. Eventually it came to pass, after the sun was going down, that a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and lo, a dread, even a great darkness, fell upon him. And now that Abram is in this state, he says to Abram, know of a surety that your seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them. They shall afflict them for 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward they shall come out with great substance. So he is essentially encapsulating in a vision the prophecy of what is to come in the book of Exodus. The story of the Exodus, really, the whole remainder of that part of the story. But you, he says, you shall go to your father in peace. You'll be buried in a good old age. Now, in the fourth generation, they will come back here. For the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet full. And it came to pass, and when the sun went down, that there was a thick darkness, and behold, a smoking furnace and a flaming torch that passed between the pieces. So this is in lieu of Abram doing it. Normally, what would happen, both parties to the cutting of the covenant would pass through together. But now, this torch goes in Abram's stead, passed between the pieces. In that day, Yahuwah cut a covenant with Abram, saying, unto your seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt, meaning the Nile, unto the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenite, the Kenizzite, the Kadmonite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Rephaim, and the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Girgashite, and the Jebusite. So we get another change of venue in chapter 16, and this, of course, is a fairly long portion. What's interesting is that we're now going to see some major changes and some, I'm normally careful about this term, but let's call it progressive revelation. We're going to see things revealed that were not obvious at first. For example, for a while, Abram thought that, in fact, his servant was going to be his heir. Now he's been told, nope, your heir will come from your own loins, but that's all he knows. So Abram, has a wife, Sarai. She bore him no children. She was barren. But she did have a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. So Sarai then says to Abram, "Now behold, look, Yahuwah has restrained me from bearing. I haven't brought forth any children. So go in, I pray you, unto my handmaid." So Abram is going to take a second wife, Hagar. "It may be that I can be built up through her." And it says Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. Now remember, that was precisely what happened with Adam, and he got in trouble for it. So Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her handmaid, after Abram had dwelt for 10 years in the land of Canaan. So he was 75 before, so he's about 85 now. And he gave her to Abram, she gave Hagar to Abram, her husband, to be his wife. And he did. He lay with Hagar. He went into her, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress, it says, was despised in her eyes. So she got haughty and uppity after she realized that she had born, was pregnant, and hadn't happened to Sarai. So Sarai then says to Abram, "My wrong is upon me. I gave my handmaid into your bosom. When she saw that she'd conceived, I was despised in her eyes. Yahuwah judge between me and ye." So Abram then says to Sarai, "Look, your handmaid, she's in your hands. You do that which seems good to you, good in your own eyes." And Sarai dealt harshly with her, and as a result, Hagar fled from before her face. So she goes out into the wilderness, and a malach, an angel of Yahuwah, found her by the fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain on the way to Shur. And he says, now notice the way that she is addressed too. The malach says to her, "Hagar, Sarai's handmaid, where you come from and where you headed?" And she said, "Well, I have fled from the face of my mistress Sarai." And the malach of Yahuwah said unto her, "Return, shuv, go back to your mistress, submit yourself under her hands, humble yourself before your master, your mistress." And the angel of Yahuwah then said to her, he's given her an order, but now the angel gives her a blessing and a prophecy as well. "I will greatly multiply your seed that it will not be numbered for multitude." That's similar to the prophecy and the promise we have for Abram. And Yahuwah, the angel of Yahuwah says unto her, "Behold, you are with child, and you shall bear a son." So now she knows the sex of the individual she's going to bear. "You shall call his name Yishma'el." Yishma'el. "Because Yahuwah has heard your affliction." So literally his name means El has heard. "And he will be a wild ass of a man. His hand will be against every man, and every man's hand will be against him. And he will dwell in the face of all his brethren." He sounds like he's going to be a difficult one. So she called the name of the place where Yahuwah spoke to her, and she said, "You," meaning El, "you are El Roi, a God of seeing." Because she said, "Have I ever even seen him that sees me?" So even here, right, she's not sure that she has seen him, but he has seen her. So therefore that place, the well that was there, so where the well, right, is Be'er, the well was called Be'er Lahai Roi, which is between Kadesh and Bered. It's the well of the living one who sees me. And sure enough, Hagar bore Abram a son. And Abram called the name of his son, whom Hagar bore, exactly as was foretold, and literally she was told, El will hear, Ishmael. And Abram was 86 years old, so he's 86 now, by the time Hagar finally bears Ishmael to Abram. Now, when Abram was 99 years old, so he was at this point 86, this is another 13 years between this chapter and chapter 17. When he's 99, Yahuwah appears to him, and he said unto him, "Ani El Shaddai, I am the all-sufficient Elohim Almighty. Walk before me and be tamim, whole or wholehearted. And I will make briti, my covenant between me and you, and I will multiply you exceedingly." So a lot of this is a repetition of a covenant that he's already been told about. So Abram fell on his face, and Elohim talked with him, and he said, "As for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be the father of a multitude of nations." And no more shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be Abraham. So he's literally adding the hey from the holy name, the set-apart name, into Abram. So he becomes Abraham, for the father of a multitude of nations have I made you. And I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I'll make nations out of you. Kings will come forth from you, and I'll establish Briti, my covenant between me and you, and your seed after you, throughout their generations, for an everlasting covenant, to be an Elohim unto you, and to your seed after you. And I will give unto you and to your seed after you the land of your sojournings, all of the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their Elohim. And Elohim then said to the guy who's now been renamed, and he will be Abraham from hereafter. He says to Abraham, and as for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your seed after you, throughout their generations. So, we're going to get some detail. Here is my covenant, which you shall keep between me and you, and your seed after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised. Now, notice, he does not say that there's an expiration date. He says, your seed after you, throughout your generations, every male among you shall be circumcised. And you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskin, and it shall be a token, a sign, a mark, an oath of the covenant between me and you. So the sign of the covenant is circumcision of the flesh of the foreskin. He that is 8 days old shall be circumcised among you, every male throughout your generations, whether he's born in your house or bought with silver from a foreigner, he that is not of your seed, but if he's born in your house and he's bought with, or if he's bought with money, silver, he needs to be circumcised. And my covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. Now, the uncircumcised male who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, that soul shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. And Elohim says to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, they're going to rename her too. She also gets a hey. You shall call her name not Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be. And I'll bless her. Moreover, I will give you a son from her. This is the first time he has now been told, not only is it going to come from your loins, he's got one there, from his loins, also from Hagar, but now the son of promise, as it's going to turn out, is going to come through Sarah. I'll give you a son through her. And yep, I will bless her. She will be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples shall be of her. Then Abram fell upon his face, and he laughed. Ve-yitzchak. And I love that word, laughter, laughed. It was used as a verb in this place. He laughed. And he said in his heart, okay, really? Shall a child be born unto a fellow that's 100 years old? And shall Sarah, now, shall she who is 90 years old bear? And Abram says to Elohim, you know, it's interesting. The first thought of his mind is, well, wait a minute. I've already got a son. What about him? Oh, that Ishmael might live before you. He's concerned. Does this mean something's going to happen to that one? Elohim said, no, but Sarah, your wife, shall in fact bear you a son, and you shall call his name Yitzhak, the root word, laughter. And I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant for his seed after him. Now, as for Ishmael, I've heard you. Behold, the one who hears was the theme of the well and of of Hagar's time there, where she was being told what's going on. And I have heard you, is what Abram, now Abraham, has been told. I've blessed him. I'll make him fruitful, and I'll multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes he shall beget, and I will in fact make of him a great nation. But, understand this, my covenant will I establish with Isaac, Yitzhak, whom Sarah shall bear with you at this same time in the next year, at this set time. So then he left off talking with him, and Elohim went up from Abraham. Abraham then took Ishmael, his son, and all that were born in his house, and all that were bought with his silver, every male among the men of Abraham's house. He didn't waste any time, folks. And he went out and he circumcised the flesh of their foreskin on that very self same day, as Yahuwah had said unto him. He was commanded, he did. And Abraham was 99 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. So notice that at this point, Abram has been walking in obedience to the Creator for 24 years before the day where he finally is told and he executes the sign of the covenant. Ishmael, his son, was 13 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. And the selfsame day was Abraham now circumcised, and Ishmael, his son, and all the men of his house, all those born in his house, those bought with silver from a foreigner, they were all circumcised with him. So that's quite an interesting story for a number of reasons, because, among other things, sounds like Abraham's staff, his house, all of his servants and his son, they were loyal. And as near as we can tell, they were told to do it, and they did it the very same day. And with that, folks, the Torah portion ends. And what we've seen here is, again, not only the beginning of the story of Abram, but a huge part of his journey, and now the fact that he has been renamed. He is now Abraham and circumcised, and he has a son by Hagar, and he knows that he is now going to have a son via his wife Sarah, and he, the new one, Yitzhak, laughter, will be the son of promise.